Hello, everyone. My name is Hannah, and you're listening to Mystic and Murder, a paranormal, unexplained, and true crime podcast. Before we begin today's episode, I want to thank you all for your patience. I know this episode is coming a couple weeks late due to me getting sick, but this is a one-woman show, and I'm really glad you guys stuck it out with me. On today's episode, we'll be discussing the exorcism of Roland Doe. This case was a pretty extensive one, so it'll be coming to you in two parts. The first part will focus on the events leading up to the exorcism, and the second part will focus on the exorcism itself. This case is the true story behind the 1971 book and 1973 movie, The Exorcist. In the movie, a 12-year-old girl becomes possessed by the devil himself, and her mother seeks the help of two priests who perform an exorcism on the girl. The plotline would be scary enough if it were fiction, but it's based on the true story of the 1949 possession of a 13-year-old boy in Cottage City, Maryland. The events that occurred prior to and throughout the exorcism were all recorded in a diary written by one of the priests who witnessed it all. For years, his story was only shared with the pseudonyms of Roland Doe or Robbie Manaheim, but we know his real name now. This is the story of the exorcism of Ronald Hunkeler. It all began on January 15th of 1949. Ronald and his grandma were sitting in her bedroom when they kept hearing a dripping noise, and they couldn't figure out where it was coming from. As they continued to look for the source of the noise, they noticed that one of the pictures on the wall was shaking, as if someone had bumped into it, but neither Ronald or his grandma had touched it. Even more concerning was that it was a picture of Jesus Christ. Eventually, the dripping stopped, but that night, Ronald's grandma heard a scratching noise coming from the floorboards near her bed. It started at 7 p.m. and continued until midnight. Ronald's mother suspected that they may have rodents, so she called an exterminator to come out the next day. When he arrived, he inspected the whole house and couldn't find anything. He didn't see any typical signs of rodents, but he placed chemicals under the floorboard anyway, just in case. Supposedly, the scratching continued for 3 more days, but it had moved to Ronald's room, and he was the only one who could still hear it. After 3 consecutive nights of scratching, another sound emerged. Ronald described this one like the sound of squeaky shoes. Again, he only heard it at nighttime. At first, Ronald's parents wondered if he was acting out and making things up. He was known to be a bit hyper, high-strung, and somewhat of a troublesome prankster. They thought that this may just be another one of his tricks, but as time went on, weird things began happening in their house. They would hear footsteps in the hallway when no one was there, and their dishes would rattle in the kitchen cabinets as if a big rig was driving down their street. At this point, they begin to think that their house is haunted. Things on 40th Avenue got a lot weirder on January 26th. Ronald's Aunt Matilda, who he lovingly referred to as Aunt Tilly, passed away. If you've heard about this case before, you might have heard her referred to as Aunt Harriet. This was another pseudonym to protect the family's identity. You may wonder what Tilly's death has to do with the haunting since it had already begun, but here's the thing. Aunt Tilly was a spiritualist, or in other words, she believed that you can communicate with those who have passed on. Although she lived in St. Louis, Missouri, Aunt Tilly and Ronald were extremely close. Some sources say that she had taught him about spiritualism, including how to use a spirit board, also known as a Ouija board. A lot of people speculate that maybe this is what caused the haunting to begin with. Perhaps Ronald had used a Ouija board and invited something terrible into his life, or maybe he opened up a portal and didn't shut out the session correctly. Whatever caused it, things really ramped up in the house after Tilly's death. A few nights after her passing, Ronald was in his bedroom with his mom and grandma about to go to bed. Suddenly, they heard the sound of marching feet and beating drums, and it sounded like they were marching towards the bed. Then, they heard knocking and banging sounds coming from the walls. Ronald's mom said, "If you are Tilly, knock 3 times. Immediately, they heard 3 distinctive knocks, along with the sensation of being struck with 3 waves of air. As if that weren't enough of a confirmation, she said, "If you are Tilly, tell me positively by knocking 4 times. This time, there were 4 distinct knocks, followed by the materialization of a claw scratch on Ronald's mattress. I don't know what your thoughts are, but scratching up Ronald's bed doesn't seem like the friendly and loving Aunt Tilly. Things just continued to get worse. Books were reportedly flying out of bookcases and landing at Ronald's feet. Coats would fly off of coat hangers and somehow land perfectly draped across his shoulder. Items on the kitchen counter would mysteriously be thrown across the room by an invisible hand. Lights would turn themselves on and off. Chairs would spin and slide around on their own. And clothing that he neatly placed in his room would be found scattered all over." Okay, so that last one just sounds like a teenager who didn't want to clean his room, if you ask me, but who knows? That's really only the start of things that Ronald and his family said happened in their home. On one occasion, several relatives came over to visit them at their home on 40th Ave. Ronald was sitting in an armchair when it began levitating. Then, the chair suddenly flipped over, dumping him out onto the floor. As I mentioned earlier, Ronald was known to be a bit of a prankster, so at first his family thought that he must have done it somehow. Both his dad and his uncle sat in the chair and tested their theory, trying to pick it up and make it look like it was levitating or flip it while they were sitting in it, but it just couldn't be done. Supposedly, while they were doing this, one of the aunts noticed a vase sitting on a nearby table. Just like the chair, it was floating in mid-air. Just as she pointed to the vase, it was hurled across the room and smashed into a wall. On a separate night, Ronald was in his bedroom when he began screaming. His family rushed to his aid just in time to see a heavy dresser slide across the room and block the entrance. Then, the drawers began flying open and slamming shut on their own. According to the family, this went on for a full minute before it stopped. Things continued to get worse and even became violent. Ronald's bed began shaking at night to the point where the mattress was bouncing up and down on the bed frame and the headboard was slamming into the wall. At first, it was only happening here or there, but now it was a nightly occurrence along with night terrors. Ronald would wake up thrashing and screaming every night, and according to the family, his screams were in a deep, guttural voice that sounded demonic. He had recurring nightmares of evil spirits every single night. His body would contort as he screamed and cried out in his sleep. He was napping during the day, barely sleeping at night, and he would stare off into the distance for long periods of time. His personality had changed completely. He was hostile, often violent and disagreeable, and had started threatening to run away from home. His parents were extremely concerned about his health and well-being, so they decided to take him to several medical professionals to determine what was going on with him. Doctors tested for epilepsy, seizures, Tourette's syndrome, and more, but they just couldn't find anything wrong with him. A psychiatrist ruled out mental health disorders like manic depression and schizophrenia. Other than being quote-unquote high-strung, there was nothing abnormal about him. A psychologist tried to determine if there was anything underlying that may be causing these fits. Apparently, childhood trauma or even current trauma can mimic signs of demonic possession, but after evaluating Ronald, he couldn't determine any cause. With everything going on at home, you would hope that Ronald could get a little reprieve and relief outside of his home, but that's not the case. Strange paranormal occurrences began happening at school, too. Papers would fly off of his desk, or his desk would vibrate in a way that it caused it to scoot across the floor. Again, due to his usual pranking nature, teachers believed that Ronald was just acting up again, but he swore that he wasn't doing it. After a while, Ronald quit going to school. On another occasion, the Hunklers were at a family friend's house. Ronald was sitting in the living room on a rocking chair, and the adults were in another room when they heard Ronald scream. They rushed in to find Ronald sitting on a chair, which was now in the middle of the room, spinning on its own. His feet were entirely off the floor, yet the chair was spinning. Unfortunately, Ronald and his family became the talk of the town. People would talk about how they could hear the things going on in the house at night, like the yelling, screaming, and banging. Sadly, most of the townsfolk just thought that there was something wrong with Ronald. We know that medically, doctors couldn't find anything wrong, so his parents decided to turn to the minister at their church. Reverend Luther Miles Schultz was a pastor at St. Stephen's Evangelical Lutheran Church, and it just so happened that he was really interested in parapsychology, which is the study of psychic phenomena. Basically, he was interested in the idea that abnormal occurrences can be caused by some sort of inner turmoil that is somehow expressed externally. Reverend Schultz hears Ronald's story, and at first he was skeptical, but he was interested and wanted to observe Ronald in the home. He planned a visit, and while he was there, he actually witnessed the activity for himself. He saw dishes fly through the air, furniture that moved on its own, glasses that broke for no reason, and the infamous bed shaking when Ronald tried to go to bed. Reverend Schultz thought that there might be a poltergeist in the home. A poltergeist is a type of spirit that causes disruption. They're usually noisy and often cause physical disturbances, like a floating vase or furniture moving on its own, for example. A little fun fact that I learned while researching is that the word poltergeist actually comes from the German language. The German verb poltern means to knock, and the German word geist means spirit, so it quite literally translates into knocking spirit. Reverend Schultz believed that a poltergeist typically wouldn't follow someone out of the home or move from house to house, so he invites Ronald to spend the night at his own house so he could observe him there. On February 17th, Ronald arrived at the home of Reverend Schultz and his wife. Back in the 40s, it was pretty common for couples to sleep in separate twin beds. On this night, it was decided that Ronald and Reverend Schultz would each sleep in a twin bed, and Mrs. Schultz would sleep in the guest room. Once they turned the lights off and got settled into their beds, all was quiet for about 10 minutes. Then, Ronald's bed began shaking. Reverend Schultz jumped out of bed and turned the light on and witnessed the bed physically shaking. At first, like everyone else, he thought that it had to be a prank. But then he realized it wasn't. There was just no way that this small 13-year-old boy could be violently shaking the entire bed. The Reverend tried to pray for it to stop, but that reportedly made it worse. He described Ronald as being wide awake while this was all happening, yet completely still. After a while, he determined that the best solution would be to get Ronald out of bed and have him sleep in a heavy armchair that sat on the other side of the bedroom. They also decided to leave a light on. So Ronald got into the chair and things were calm for a while, but then the chair started violently shaking and bouncing, just like the bed. It seemed to be rocking back and forth between the front and back legs, and after a minute or so, the whole thing tipped over and dumped Ronald out onto the floor. Again, the entire time the chair was shaking, Ronald was just sitting there, staring straight forward in a trance-like state. He never moved. After it stopped, Reverend Schultz tested the chair out and tried to tip it over for himself, but he couldn't do it. He then decides that the best solution is to put Ronald on the floor. If there's nothing to shake, then all should be well. They made a makeshift bed for Ronald out of blankets and placed it right next to Reverend Schultz's bed. Again, they leave the light on. This time, Ronald and the Reverend were able to fall asleep. But around 3 a.m., Reverend Schultz wakes up and sees movement. He notices that the makeshift bed on the floor is moving, sliding, actually. He yelled at Ronald to stop, thinking again that Ronald was somehow causing this to happen, but it just keeps sliding. And maybe the weirdest part of it all is that there are no wrinkles in the blanket at all as it moved. It somehow was sliding around exactly as it was. The next thing he knew, Ronald's makeshift bed slid directly under his own, and Ronald himself began bouncing up and down, smashing his face into the bed frame and bed springs. Finally, somehow Reverend Schultz was able to make it stop, and he pulled Ronald out from under the bed. He realized that this just wasn't going to work, and he sends Ronald home. Shortly after that night, he contacted a parapsychologist named J.B. Ryan and told him Ronald's story. Ryan also made a visit to Ronald's home to observe the strange occurrences, but nothing happened while he was there. Based on what he was told, he agreed that it could be poltergeist activity. Shortly after the visit to Reverend Schultz's house, things ramped up even more. Starting on February 26, scratches began to materialize on Ronald's body. This happens for 4 consecutive nights in a row. On the 4th night, the scratches actually appeared to be forming letters on his body. At this point, Ronald and his family are desperate. They no longer think they have a poltergeist in the home, but instead, they fear that Ronald might be possessed by a demon. Reverend Schultz suggests that the family seek help from a Catholic priest because they know more about demonic possession than he did. Ronald's grandma went to St. James Catholic Church and met Father Edward Albert Hughes, an assistant priest. He gave her holy water and told her to sprinkle it around the bedroom and light some candles in the room whenever something strange happened. The family followed the advice, but apparently it didn't help. Allegedly, the bottle of holy water was picked up by this entity, thrown across the room, and smashed. Father Hughes made a visit to the home, and reportedly when he met Ronald, the temperature in the room became very cold, and he witnessed Ronald speaking in Latin, a language that he did not know. Father Hughes said he could sense a presence of evil in Ronald and thought that this was no ordinary possession. No, he thought that Ronald was possessed by the devil himself. He thinks that Ronald needs an exorcism, and soon. Father Hughes decides to contact Archbishop Patrick O'Boyle of Washington, D.C. The Archbishop gives Father Hughes permission to perform the rite of exorcism on Ronald. Now, apparently there is no official record of their meeting, so some people are skeptical that what I'm about to tell you actually happened. Sometime between February 27th and March 6th, it's said that Ronald was admitted to Georgetown University Hospital under an assumed name in order to perform the exorcism. Skeptics think that there is no way the Archbishop would have allowed Father Hughes to perform the exorcism himself. Typically, only ordained priests or high-ranking members of the clergy are allowed to perform the rite of exorcism. It was also recommended that an exorcist be of, quote-unquote, mature years. Father Hughes was a young assistant priest, not yet fully ordained. His exorcism would become known as the botched exorcism, as it went horribly wrong. Ronald had been strapped down to a hospital bed for the exorcism, but according to an eyewitness, when Father Hughes began reciting some of the prayers, Ronald managed to slip one of his hands out of the restraints, grabbed a spring from the bed, and used it to slice Father Hugh's arm, lacerating it from his shoulder to his wrist. Apparently, the cut was so bad that it required 100 stitches. The exorcism came to a halt, and Father Hugh's never attempted to finish it. Again, there's no actual record of this botched exorcism attempt. Some sources say that those who knew Father Hugh's said he was forever changed by this, but other sources say that it never happened and Father Hugh's was never injured at all. According to one of my sources, there are records to show that Ronald was actually checked into a hospital at this time, but it was under his actual name, not a presumed one. Records also show that he underwent extensive medical and psychological evaluations during this time. So, whether or not this botched exorcism actually occurred, I'm not sure. Regardless of why he was in the hospital, when he returned home, things got worse yet again. One night, Ronald was getting ready for bed when, again, scratches began materializing and forming letters onto his chest. There were witnesses, his hands were free, and these scratches were happening right in front of their eyes. Ronald cried out in agony as the letters scratched on his chest began to form a word. It said, Lewis. Now, my first thought, honestly, was, what the heck is Lewis? Like, is that the name of the demon or something? But apparently, it meant something different for the Hunkler family. Aunt Tilly was from St. Louis, and they had other relatives living there as well. They immediately took this as a sign that they needed to go to St. Louis to make this all go away. They didn't have a plan, they just hopped on a train and headed to Missouri on the off chance that this might be the solution. On March 8th, they arrived in St. Louis and moved in with some relatives who lived in a quiet suburb called Belnor, hoping that they had left the evil spirit behind. At first, Ronald was behaving differently here, in a good way. He went to bed that night hopeful, but immediately things began happening. He was screaming, his bed was shaking, things were flying around the room, his whole family was terrified. The relatives that they had moved in with were all devout Catholics, and Ronald's older cousin in the house was attending St. Louis University, a prestigious Catholic school. She decided to speak with one of her professors, Father Raymond Bishop, about Ronald. She told him that she thought there was something spiritually wrong with him, and she asked Father Bishop to meet with him. He agreed to meet Ronald as well as observe his nightly behavior. On March 11th, Father Bishop arrived at the home on 8435 Roanoke Drive along with another Jesuit priest, Father William Bowdern of St. Francis Xavier College Church. Father Bowdern was a man of rock-solid faith, and he later becomes a very important part in this story. Father Bishop and Father Bowdern walked through the house, read several prayers, and blessed each room. Father Bowdern pinned a holy relic to Ronald's pillow just before Ronald got into bed at 10 p.m. The priest stayed and observed him for nearly an hour and witnessed no signs of demonic possession, so they decided to leave. Just as they were about to head out the door, they heard noises coming from Ronald's room. They ran to his room and witnessed the bed shaking and swaying, as well as new scratches materializing on Ronald, despite the blessings and the holy relic pinned to the pillow. Father Bishop sprinkled holy water on the bed in the sign of the cross, and it stopped shaking, but only temporarily. As soon as Father Bishop stepped out of the room, the bed began shaking again. At 11:15 p.m., the activity stopped completely, and the rest of the night was actually very peaceful. Father Bishop and Father Bowdern agree that this activity could be demonic, so Father Bowdern consults the Roman ritual to determine what to do. The Roman ritual is the 17th century manual that gives detailed rules, prayers, and procedures involving the ancient Catholic rite of exorcism. According to the Catholic Church, Father Bowdern must prove that Roland is moving along the classic path to full demonic possession before permission for an exorcism would be granted. The church identifies four different types or stages of demonic activity. The first is demonic infestation, which is the presence of evil in a location or object. The second is demonic vexation, which is when someone believes that they're experiencing physical attacks from a demon, regular nightmares, and so on. That stage is also referred to as demonic oppression. The third is demonic obsession, or mental attacks. In this phase, the person might have trouble functioning, and they probably rarely sleep. The last type is full-blown demonic possession. At this point, the person is so broken down mentally and physically by everything that they have gone through, and a demon is able to take control of the person's body and use it as a vessel. When a person is possessed, they might exhibit superhuman strength, speak in languages that they don't know, have knowledge of things that they should know nothing about, as well as have aversions to holy objects like holy water, rosary beads, a cross, or a crucifix. The first three stages can be addressed by an ordinary priest, but the last stage, demonic possession, is reserved only for an appointed exorcist. At this point, Ronald had definitely experienced the first three stages, and they hoped that an exorcism would prevent the fourth. On March 14th, Father Bowdern contacted Archbishop Joseph Ruderolf of St. Louis and requested an exorcism to be performed on Ronald. But he actually requested that the Archbishop choose a different priest to perform it. Apparently, he didn't feel like he was qualified enough, and he felt like he wasn't in the right place spiritually to be an exorcist, but the Archbishop granted permission to exorcise Ronald and denied his request to choose someone else to be the exorcist. He specifically chose Father Bowdern and said that he had to be the one to do it, and so he did. Father Bowdern began preparing for the exorcism and insisted that Father Bishop keep a diary of the events so that they could have documentation, as well as create a sort of how-to manual for future exorcisms. In order to protect Ronald's identity, it was decided that this case would be referred to as the Exorcism of Roland Doe. When you think of an exorcism, you probably think of what you see on TV or in the movies, which is usually a quick fix. Within a few hours, the person is freed from the demonic entity that possessed them. That isn't always the case, and it definitely wasn't what happened in Ronald's. His exorcism would last for a total of 34 days. That's all for today's episode. In part two, we're going to be discussing the exorcism itself, and as you just heard, that is 34 days long, so that'll make for a pretty detailed episode. New episodes of Mystic and Murder will be posted every other Sunday. Tune in, follow, and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. You can find the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at Mystic and Murder. You can send in an email to mysticandmurder@gmail.com with suggestions, requests, and even personal spooky stories. If you like what you hear and you want to support the podcast, you can go to www.patreon.com/mysticandmurder. You can click support at anchor.fm/mysticandmurder. You can make a donation at paypal.me/mysticandmurder. Or you can buy Mystic and Murder merchandise. Head to mysticandmurder.com/shop to learn more. Thank you all so much for listening, and I hope you sleep tight. Remember, all things weird lurk at night.